Company retreats like this are the continuation of a tradition Steve established at Apple early on. Watching him in action at these brainstorming sessions is an opportunity to observe him at his lucid best as a company builder and motivator.
Slicing into the future.
His opening remarks reveal his faith in high technology and his idealism, an unusual combination that is part of his uniqueness. In effect, he is planting the seeds of a new corporate culture.
More important than building a product, we are in the process of architecting a company that will hopefully be much, much more incredible. The total will be much more incredible than the sum of its parts.
Hello, and welcome to Hillcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Airfon Elijah. Joining me today, he can't stop. He writes Apple books faster than rabbits multiply, and he's got another one on the way. Leander Caney is here.
Hey, have fun.
Also joining us, he has to sit in a small room with Leander Caney all day, so let's all be nice to him. Lewis Wallace is here.
Hey, it's really great to be here.
God bless you, Lou. Somebody's got to do it. I'm glad that it's you.
I think you meant to say gets to sit in a small room with Leander Caney.
Isn't that what I said? I think that's what I said, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, I probably misheard.
Well, we have got an absolutely packed show today. We've got so much stuff in here. This is going to be a mega show, of course, because it is the six-year anniversary of Steve Jobs' death. And every year I do this now, we append onto the end of the show the Steve Jobs keynotes at Stanford that he did, I think, in like 2005 or 2006, which I think is one of his best public appearances, one of his best keynotes that he ever gave. And it's about 30 minutes long, and I got permission from Stanford to include it in the show. So if you want to be inspired, stay tuned after the show. It will begin right after the show ends, and stay tuned for that. Also, Leander is going to be sharing how Apple's been doing these 6 years since Steve Jobs passed away by the numbers. He's got all sorts of facts and figures locked and loaded, ready to share with you. And he's also going to be sharing his review of the all-new Apple TV with 4K. And if you stick around till the end, we're going to be doing our favorite iPhone 8/8 Plus cases. You know, you need a case, right? Every time you get a new iPhone, you're always searching for a great case. And there's so many pieces of total crap out there. And we're going to bring you some of the best ones. This is going to be a series of case reviews that we do probably over the next 2 or 3 weeks. So we'll just keep bringing you one after another of the best stuff that's out there. And there are some good cases out there that everyone needs to know about. So we'll do that. Okay, before we do any of that, though, I want to say a big thank you to Squarespace.com. Squarespace.com. I like Squarespace so much. I can't help but get musical when I talk about them. I use Squarespace, and if you need a website, you should too. Here's why. Do you need to turn your cool idea into a new website, maybe showcase your work or your artwork, sell products or services of all or any kind? Maybe you want to promote your physical business or your online business, maybe your new massage parlor that you just started. Or maybe you want to announce an upcoming event, like you're getting married or you're throwing a big wild party and you want all the cool people to come, including me and Leander Caney. If you have a Squarespace website, we might just do that. Here's what I love about Squarespace. They're very talented designers make these templates that you can go and choose from. And you can select one, and with a click of a button, you can have a website up and running in no time that will look beautiful. Or you can customize the entire thing and make it look uniquely yours. And your Squarespace site is optimized for mobile right out of the box. Your website is going to look great on any device that visits. Plus, they give you a ton of powerful analytics, built-in search engine optimization, and there's nothing to patch or upgrade ever. And you get access to Squarespace's 24/7 customer service support. Boom. Why am I still talking? Why are you still listening? You need to head on over to squarespace.com. Sign up for a free trial. Build a website. Test it out. Take it for a spin. See how you like it. I think you're going to love it. I do. I pay for it every month. They don't give it to me for free. I pay for it. I like it so much. And at the end of your trial, if you want to continue your service, use code CULTCAST at checkout to save 10% off your first purchase. And if you order a year of service, you get a free domain name, plus you get an additional discount at squarespace.com, squarespace.com, squarespace.com. Come. Okay. Can we start with this story? I ran across a little factoid in iOS 11 this week that'll put your brain in a serious boggle. iOS 11 includes a brand new image and video format. We've talked about this in past shows. So in iOS 10, the image format was JPEG and the video format was H.264. And we told you that in iOS 11, you're going to be moving to HEIF for the image format and HEVC for the video format, and that those were much more efficient formats. Well, I was playing around with my iPhone formats because in iOS 11, you can use the iOS 10 formats if you choose. And I turned them on, and I saw that Apple listed the sizes for the different images and videos in iOS 10 and in iOS 11, and I was flabbergasted. So check this out. In iOS 10, if you took a 4K video, that would take up about 350 megabytes for a minute of video. In iOS 11, that same video would only take up 170 megabytes. 170 megabytes. It's less than half the file size as iOS 10. A 175 megabyte 1080p video at 60 frames per second in iOS 10 would be 175 megabytes. In iOS 11, only 90 megabytes. So Apple has effectively doubled the space of your iPhone with a software update. Doubled the space.
That's pretty, I don't know about doubled the space, but it's pretty insane, isn't it? Those are some really significant savings.
Well, if you think about it this way, I would argue that most of the space taken on your iPhone is taken by photos and videos. At least it is on mine. What else is taking your space? Apps? I mean, if you're just an absolute animal, which you are, El Caney, so maybe your apps take up like 10 to 20 gigabytes. But mine only take, I don't know, maybe 10?
Yeah, I'm looking right now.
So if this is what is primarily taking space on your iOS device, then Apple having the size of all the files essentially doubles your space on your iPhone, which is nuts. It's nuts. With a software update, poof, you're getting all that extra space. And it also makes me feel less guilty about taking 4K videos because before I was always thinking to myself, man, this is taking up so much space. Do I really need to be recording in 4K? And now storage it's guilt-free, right? Yeah, I'm a real storage miser. Mike Kamik on Twitter, when I tweeted this out this morning, I tweeted a graphic at it, which I'll include in the show notes. He tweeted back, which makes removing the 128 gigabyte option and forcing everyone into the 256 gigabyte option even more bizarre. He's talking about Apple removing the 128 gigabyte option in the new iPhones, but we all know why Apple did it. It's because they want to force you to buy the more expensive phone. And also, if you think about it, if you get a 64 gigabyte iPhone, then your iPhone, all of your photos and videos are taking up half the space. So it's kind of like they're selling you a 128 gigabyte model. So in spirit, the 128 gigabyte model exists. Kind of. Doesn't really work out that way 100%, but, you know, I sound like a major Apple fanboy, don't I, when I start talking about this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But this blew my mind, and it's a very cool feature of iOS 11 that I haven't really seen very many people talk about so far.
You know, one thing, have you seen any of the comparisons between, you know, JPEGs and the new format?
No, I haven't.
Neither have I, but...
I
know there's some out there.
And actually... If you switch the format on your iPhone, you can take pictures in JPEG and then also take pictures in HEIF. There's a toggle for that in your settings. So you can go ahead and just switch back and forth between the two formats. So if you wanted to do some tests, that's actually a really good idea, Leander, to do some tests to see what the different images look like.
Get on it.
And what the different videos look like.
Well, I'm blind as a bat. Anyway, although actually I'm going to go back and correct something I said last week that was completely wrong. But
What?
But and never mind, we'll get to it later. But
Okay. Yeah,
let's do that.
That's a great idea, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be really easy to do. By the way, if you're unable to use HEIF and HEVC in iOS 11, your format may just need to be switched on your iPhone. And if you're unable to switch your format, it could be because you can't use HEIF or HEVC on your iPhone until your Mac is upgraded to Mac OS High Sierra. So they both have to be using the newest OS in order for you to use the new formats. I learned that when I was upgrading my Mac. I upgraded my Mac and I got a notification on my iPhone that said, now that you've upgraded, we're switching you to the new formats on your iPhone. And I was like, oh, I didn't know that this was a thing. So I guess you have to be using the new OS in both places. Let's talk about Google for a second. As many of you probably know, Google had a keynote this week and they were talking about their new Pixel phone, which actually looks cool. I think if I ever went Android, I would definitely go Pixel. It's the purest Android experience that you can get, and I feel like it's probably one of the only phones that can compete with the iPhone.
What are you saying, the purest Android experience you can get? I mean, it's a, you know, like the purest Android experience is still going to be an Android experience, even if it's pure.
I'm just saying, if somebody came to my door and they had a gun, and they're like, "You got to use Android right now," and they're like, "Which one do you want? I've got one here. I've got one here in my trench coat." And he opens up his trench coat. He's totally nude, and he has, you know, like Android phones hanging in his jacket. I would probably go with the Pixel.
That's like a famous old Benny Hill sketch when they're trying to get his dog like to eat this new dog food and he won't eat it. So he gives him a choice of some rusty nails, some broken glass, some manure, and some this dog food. And he starts eating the manure, and then there's this broom comes in the side and pushes the dog over to the dog food.
Yeah, so a similar situation would have to happen to me. And I love my iPhone. I don't think I'm going to switch to Android. I'm just saying, if I did, the Pixel actually looks appealing to me just because it doesn't have skins and it actually gets updated by Google because it doesn't have a bunch of extra crap bolting onto it, you know? Anyway, that's not what I wanted to talk about. They released a product that kind of blew my mind this week. And if you're a Star Trek fan, you'll no doubt remember like the real-time translators that everyone has whenever they're like talking to Klingons and stuff. And Google, it seems, has essentially released a technology that is that. So they released these new earbuds called the Pixel Buds. And the Pixel Buds are kind of like the AirPods competitors, but they do something special in that when you pair them with the Pixel phone, you can tap on the right earpiece and ask it to help you translate some language. And then you can speak English, and the phone that you're holding in your hand will translate your English in real time to one of 40 different languages. So if you're talking to someone, they're listening to the phone, and then they speak their input back into the phone, and the phone will send that language in English back to your Pixel Buds. And it looks like it works pretty well. At least it did in the demo. We'll have to see how this works in real life, right?
Yeah.
But
well, I actually tried this in Japan, which I was really skeptical of, using Google's Translate app on the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
Where you can dictate into it and or type a message, you know, and it'll convert it. And you know, it was kind of worked.
Uh-huh.
So half the time it was gibberish. So I'm really skeptical. You know, I've seen these amazing demos. Microsoft had an amazing demo of exactly the same stuff in real time, you know, like a year ago, maybe 2 years
mm-hmm.
ago. Mm-hmm. It looks great in a demo, you know. And if it worked, it would honestly be astonishing. It would be amazing, wouldn't it? But I'm really skeptical that it's going to work in real life.
I'm skeptical too, but I was thinking, even if this only kind of works, like let's just say it's 75% of the way there, and you know, instead of asking for a cup of coffee, you know, the person listening gets asked where the nearest butter statues are. That would still be incredible, because if you could only communicate, you know, kind of with the other person, that's better than not being able to communicate at all, right? The fact that it would work even slightly would be impressive to me.
Yeah, but it's funny what you know how far gestures, smiles, you know, gesticulating, miming, you know, all the other human ways of communicating.
Miming? What the hell are you asking these people for?
We had with some Thai guys at this market, you know, and we were drinking whiskey with these guys, and we were having a high old time, and I think and we were just gesticulating and making silly noises, and he was trying to get us to eat this pork, this pig intestines, and I was like, what is this? Is this pig? like that, and the guy, he started laughing so hard, he almost like died right there. And if I got out my Pixel phone and put my earbuds in, it would just ruin that. It would ruin that sort of, you know, a much more human interaction.
That's actually a very interesting point, because I've had a lot of those situations as well where you're dancing around, you're trying to get the person to understand you, and And you build a very special camaraderie. A very human interaction happens when you're trying to communicate, but you don't speak the same language. And it is somewhat magical, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. Exactly. Yeah. Right. And I think like mediating it with a phone or some other piece of technology, you know, takes away, detracts from that. Although, you know, because we did try that in Japan. We had to talk to this woman and she didn't speak any English. We also didn't speak any Japanese and we were trying to use the phone. And I guess it kind of worked okay. Mm-hmm. Half it was rubbish, you know. And it was, I guess we were trying to ask her some questions and on a serious matter, you know, like, so it wasn't like, you know, we were having a good time. It wasn't like there was any fun to be spoiled by the technology.
And it depends on what language the person you're trying to talk to speaks, because if it's like Spanish or French, you kind of share the same vocabulary in some regards. And so it's easier to understand people like that. But if like they speak Japanese or Russian or Chinese, it'd probably be much more difficult to communicate. Plus, like, how do you mime? I have to go to the bathroom. Where's the bathroom? Where would you even, even begin? Start undoing your pants?
Pretty easy. I know how to mime that one. But actually, Lewis, I mean, you spent a lot of time in Italy, right? I mean, what do you use when you're trying to communicate with the locals?
Yeah, you know, using Google Translate, everybody seems to use that now a lot.
And the Italians don't mind that. I would have thought the Italians would have hated that. If you'd like,
or the French,
you told
yeah.
the waiter, hold on, wait a second, let me get my phone, and then, you know, he would have been, ah.
Well, I'm talking about, like, when I was in the hospital, you know, I was talking with people about things using Google Translate, and that worked great. You know, it was a little slow, but it worked. I mean, they didn't speak a lick of English, and I barely speak any Italian, so... you know, I mean, it's one thing to say, oh, you know, how do I get a beer? I mean, you know, yeah, that's right. Pretty easy to mime. But like, oh, I've got a severe pain in my upper right abdomen.
Pancreas.
Right. Yeah. Should my heart be racing like this? Yeah, you don't want to be miming that kind of thing, do you?
Yeah, they'll just think that you're in love. That's a good point. If you're just trying to party, you can talk to anybody, right?
Right,
if you're
exactly,
just trying to get a beer,
exactly.
It doesn't matter what language you speak.
Yeah.
You get along with everybody.
Right. That's very true. That's a good point, Lewis. Yeah, so maybe, you know, yeah, maybe they do have a place then.
Well, and if you, I mean, the thing that I think is the weirdest about those Pixel Buds is, you know, when you've got two earphones in, I mean, that's really weird. And, I mean, I wonder if it's, like the one of the greatest things about the AirPods is that you can use one or the other by themselves, right? And that would make that kind of a translation thing way better than, like, I'm completely walled off with my crazy earbuds in that look, you know, like tin cans in my ears. I think that the danger of, not danger, but I mean the downside of having those things in your ears is, you know, yeah, you can hear things, but you're also like the man on the moon, maybe kind of
yeah,
really not yeah. in the moment.
Yeah. I wonder, maybe you can just use with one in your ear. I would guess that you probably could, but... They didn't go into that level of detail. But in any case, a very cool technology. And the demo itself was one of those things where you see and you think, wow, we are living in the future. That's incredible. Well, so I'd love to see how it works.
It's an interesting part of the trend, isn't it? Like adding all this technology, adding all this AI to all these different products. You know, I was reading about like the, you know, the Apple's latest camera app, you know, instead of upping the megapixels and upping, you know, sort of the physical attributes, what they're doing is they're laying on all this software intelligence. So all those studio lighting effects, you know, that's basically a software camera. And I think we're going to see more and more of that, aren't we? You know, like, and this is where they have this advantage over regular camera makers and headphone makers too. You know, they're adding all this intelligence, AI, all these capabilities into these devices. You know, it's been predicted for a long time, hasn't it? Really, you know, sort of like intelligence in everyday objects. But here we're seeing it in earbuds, cameras, stuff like that. You know, the camera is not just a camera; it's something that can see, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's really going to be interesting what they're going to be doing with that. You know, all this AR technology stuff is an extension of that too.
They just bought another AI company that had to do with photography called Regained. It's a French company, and the company specializes in distinguishing what is inside your photo based upon, you know, AI technology, and also selecting which photo looks the most aesthetically pleasing. Which I don't know how they do that. I feel like most humans can't even do that. But apparently, this technology is supposed to be able to do that. So yeah, you're right. They're constantly integrating all this new technology and now AI technology into their camera app to make it do things that improve your photography without even increasing the fidelity of like the sensor or something.
Right. Well, the new do you see that new Camera Plus app? It can take a photo now when you smile. So if you're doing a selfie, it'll wait until you actually smile. It'll detect the smile, then take the picture, which is really kind of incredible.
Huh. What if you, because you know, people have like their real smile and then they have their camera smile. Is it able to distinguish between the two?
Like, a fake one?
Yeah. One of those really terrible fake ones. Is it going to take it then?
We'll see.
that would be an app worth buying if it only takes it when people actually smile.
Well, it shouldn't be duck lips too. Shouldn't it detect duck lips? Isn't that really what
you're duck
doing?
Face.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you give duck face, it automatically quits the app.
I'm really intrigued by all this stuff, you know, adding all this this AI, all this intelligence, all the software to cameras and things. I think it's going to be awesome.
I mean, just think about translation a little bit more. If you think about in 10 years, I think it's only a matter of time before AI gets to a point where it probably will be able to understand language quite naturally. And the responses that you may get back may not be totally natural, but at least the understanding of what the other person is saying might be able to be translated correctly. And if you get that part down,
well,
Google's
saying it's already at that level now. I mean, you know, they say that it's like, I think 99.8, you know, understand level. Yeah, they say it's at human. They claim that they're, you know, that Google Translate is now at human, is equivalent to human translators.
I call bollocks on that. Have you ever typed in something into Google Translate and then you send it to somebody who speaks that language and they're like, where did you get this?
Yeah, right, exactly. But I think that, you know, recognition though, right, which is that the same as translation?
I don't know. It's the same as translation because translation implies context, doesn't it?
Well, right.
And the meaning could change, you know, depending on what you're talking about.
Precisely.
Or how you say it.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think what they're talking about is recognition. You know, like they can recognize they can recognize the words that you said, but then the actual translation part, like you said, is much trickier because it depends a lot on context and, you know, and knowledge and all these other things that the AI doesn't have yet. But basic word recognition, I think, is up to human levels now.
That's why I envy people who speak two languages, especially people that grew up learning another language. Because, you know, when you're a kid, it's a total freebie. You don't have to do anything. You just learn it, right? It takes zero work. And then you grow up and now all of a sudden you understand two languages and you could act as a translator, and those guys make pretty decent money too. You could go work for like the NSA or something and listen to people's Echo phone calls and translate those for the
These
NSA.
People used to make money. Soon there's another job like typewriter repairman going away.
I don't know. Yeah. Well, maybe in the next 10 years, but I don't think it's going to happen in the next, you know, two or three. But yeah, maybe Google will be doing all of that, you know, for the NSA. They probably are now.
I mean, I just met my neighbor who's making good money working for Amazon Alexa. He's doing all the localization, you know, like of the Alexa app, helping it translate into French and Spanish and Italian. He speaks like three different languages. And
wow.
He's like, you know, he had like some language major from college, and he's landed this like, you know, plum tech job in the middle of San Francisco. He's doing really nicely. Thank you very much.
I know some people that do that too. I know someone who speaks Japanese, and she translates things from English into Japanese, and she does pretty well for herself. So it's just one of those skills where you're like, yeah, I just grew up knowing this. I didn't even have to do any work. Now I make $125,000 a year at Amazon. Yeah. Right.
Well, my kids all speak Spanish, but
there you go. The moral of the story: learn another language while you're still under five, and you'll be set for life.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on to the Apple TV 4K. Leander, you did a review this week. How did you like it? How did you like the 4K in all its glory? I know you were saying last week that you couldn't even tell a difference, and look who changed their tune.
I've got to correct that because that was idiotic. I mean, I got to say it was really, really, really bad. And I only discovered it because I actually had I've got two, you know, two movies, in one in HD and one in 4K. Mm-hmm. So Close Encounters of the Third Kind, I bought it years ago on iTunes, and I was looking in the. And when I was playing around with the 4K TV, I'm like, oh, wow, look, they've upgraded it to 4K for free. So I played a scene from the movie at the end, and I go, man, yeah, that does look really nice. And then I switched it. I was like, you know, I wonder how it looks. So I looked at the timestamp, and I pulled up the HD version, and I went to exactly the same spot in the movie and watched it again. And the HD one, I was like, it was as clear as day. It was muddy. It was fuzzy. It wasn't anywhere near as sharp. It wasn't anywhere near as colorful. It was a night and day difference.
Huh.
And I was really flabbergasted because and then it was like, I was like, oh my God, I can't even look at it anymore. You know, like it's just horrific. So I could see, you can see it really, really clearly, especially when you do something like that kind of side by, you know, before I hadn't been doing side by side comparisons.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't think you could really, you know, to be honest, it, I don't do it for a living, right? So I'm not doing this all the time, and I don't know what to look for. Now I do, you know, so now I can actually see it, and it was really clear, this, the difference in it. So I was really pleased I did that. And yeah, it does. It's really, really spectacular. It's awesome, amazing. And there's all sorts of other things I like about the Apple TV too. I mean, I wish, you know, where we live, we've got Comcast Xfinity for the, mm-hmm. for the cable carrier. And mm-hmm. of course, they're one of the few carriers that doesn't support the single sign-on. But when I get set up the box, you know, you unbox the Apple TV, you plug it into the TV, and it says, you know, it already knows that you have an iPhone. So it says, just hold your iPhone next to the phone, next to the Apple TV, and it'll pull in all the settings by Bluetooth. Bang. Wow. You know, like 2 minutes.
Wow.
I remember before when you had to do it, you had to type in your Apple ID, you had to type in the Apple ID password, you know, which is a huge, horrific nightmare. Then you got to sign into all these different apps, you got to set up the Wi-Fi password. That's another huge headache. This was amazing, right? It was just plug it in, and then bang, it's ready to go. Like, it was literally like 2 minutes. And then if we'd been able to do the single sign-on with the cable provider, that would have made it even easier to get all of the different apps set up too, you know, like Showtime, HBO, and all the other ones that that I subscribe to. So, you know, I was up and watching the TV in a few minutes, and it really does look glorious. The Siri remote, even though it's a horrible fiddly little, you know, lollipop stick.
I thought you were hard on the remote. I mean, it's not the best remote I've ever used, but it's not that bad.
It is. It's hateful. I hate it. In fact, I was going to buy, you can buy cases on Amazon for like $6 or $7. It's like a big 3D printed, big sort of box,
like a normal size,
you know,
remote.
Yeah, and you put it inside. It's like a, you know, it's like a big plastic case that's basically empty, with a little slot for the Apple TV remote. And you put the Apple TV remote inside of it, and it gives you a lot more, you know, something to hold on to.
Johnny Ive gave you a Ferrari, and you're complaining that you just want a Camry. That's what's happening here. You just want a Toyota Camry.
Well, every time I pick it up, it's upside down every single time.
Yeah, that happens to me a lot.
It's
too,
almost
actually.
Magic.
Yeah, I know it is. It's like, you know, dropping some peanut butter toast, right? You know how it always lands upside
every
down.
Every time.
Every single time, well, the wrong way around. So actually, you know what I did is you can buy a little strap, like a wrist strap. That mm-hmm. plugs into the lightning port, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and that tells you, you know, which way to hold it. That was actually pretty good. I had one of those, although it's been lost, so I don't know where that's gone. But, you know, the one thing I do like about the remote, the one thing that works really well is Siri. You know, funny enough, Siri works mm-hmm. great. Mm-hmm. Siri is great for controlling the TV, for actually basic controls. So you can say, you know, play Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and it'll start playing. You can say, you know, one of the things I like to do is, like, you know, what do they say? And so you hold down the Siri button, you say, what did they say? And it skips it back 15 seconds, and it turns on subtitles mm-hmm. so that you can just repeat what they said in that last 15 seconds.
That's helpful.
That is a really great little feature, yeah, because that happens a lot, you know, with my, I'm so deaf and blind, you know, that I can barely hear or understand what they're saying. So, especially when I was watching The Wire or something like that. Remember, Lewis, did you get that with The Wire? I had to watch The Wire with subtitles on,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, the whole thing. It's kind of cheating, but...
Right. So, in fact, it's no good because you're already watching it with subtitles and for a show like that. But, you know, like for some other shows, it's definitely really super helpful. And you can say, you know, rewind 3 minutes, rewind at the beginning, fast forward, you know, 1 minute. And that kind of stuff works really great. So it's really, really, it's a super nice way to use the TV. And in fact, I wish, you know, I keep forgetting, you know, and I keep going back to the old habits and, like, using my fingers. Mm-hmm. So, because I don't know, with you, did you say you watch everything with the Apple TV, don't you?
Almost. Oh, yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, like, I haven't gotten to that habit yet. Like, I actually use the Comcast box, like, when I watch TV, because a lot of stuff I watch on demand, you know, it's already in Comcast, so HBO mm-hmm. stuff, you know. So I tend to use the HBO box. Well, I wish I could use the Apple TV more, just because of this, you know, controlling the TV is so much better through using the, you know, the Siri.
It's certainly, for me, the best experience I've ever had or controlling the TV. There's just nothing else like it. One of the other things that you mentioned, too, that I thought was really interesting is the 4K screensavers.
Oh, man, yeah, they're trippy.
I bet those look incredible in 4K.
Oh, they're really hypnotic, yeah. Who was joking? They said
you were
that
saying that they were recorded in 4K and then downscaled to 1080p, which I didn't actually know that.
Yeah, that's what I read. Yeah, that's what I heard, that they were actually downscaled. So they remastered them, and then now they're in their full 4K, you know,
oh,
UHD
man.
Glory.
I kind of feel like just those alone would make it worth buying the 4K Apple TV.
I've said that. Yeah,
those are like those are living room set pieces. They're moving right. art.
Yeah.
And anytime I have people come over, if they haven't seen an Apple TV before, they become entranced sitting right. in the living room staring yeah. into those.
Just for 20 minutes, right? They're in, the, they're in this
yeah.
in this
they just
trance.
Sit there and there's like a small string of drool coming out of their mouth, just dripping, and they don't yeah. even realize it's there.
Yeah, yeah. I know, I've sat there, you know, and watched the screensaver for 20 minutes, just sat and watched it, and watched it loop around. It's actually really hypnotic and really relaxing. It's like the ASMR.
It is. It is. It's if like it's like whispering. Visual ASMR. They should have Tim Cook record some whispering for those tracks. And they put you in a contemplative mood. I feel like my brain is just set free when I sit in front of those, and I can just think and you know, be relaxed.
Right. Definitely. It's meditative.
Yeah, it is. It's like doing meditation. All right. Well, the 4K Apple TV is available for $179 for the 32-gigabyte model, and 64 gigabytes is $199. I don't know why you would get 64 gigabytes. I don't even know why Apple sells it, quite honestly, because 32 gigabytes seems like it's enough, and it seems strange to me that they're selling two models. In any case, I'm going to be getting
TV
one
now,
of those.
Though, that's the only thing.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, as soon as I get my bigger TV, I'm hunting for a 65-inch OLED LG TV. And as soon as I get one, I'm going to be upgrading to the 4K oh, yeah, Apple TV.
Yeah, and then the next thing you know, they're going to something else is going to come along, and it's going to look 8K. Hopelessly, yeah, hopelessly outdated.
It's going to be a while before we make the move to 8K. There's still not really even any 4K content. We're still at the very beginning of it. There's some 4K YouTube, which, by the way, doesn't work on the Apple TV, right?
Yeah, the YouTube app is right. It doesn't support. They use a special codec, right? Which isn't supported yet.
Yeah, so the Apple TV doesn't support the VP9 format that YouTube uses now, which I hope it does eventually, because there's not a lot of 4K content out there. Netflix
well, I don't know. Actually,
I was
thinking about
Amazon's going to have some.
I now's a good time. There didn't used to be a lot of 4K content, you know, like a year or two ago, you know, when Netflix, I think, was one of the pioneers of that. But there's quite a lot of 4K content these days.
Well, there's more and more of it. And then the other issue is going to be your ISP caps, which all the ISPs are trying to get rich quick, trying to cap everyone so that they, you know, go over when they stream a 4K movie and they can ding you. So we're going to have to wait and see what happens with that. That's going to be a big hindrance to this whole movement to 4K. But hopefully you're in an area where you can get a plan without a cap. My internet doesn't have a cap, but I have gigabit fiber. So sorry, you chumps.
Nice.
But yeah, I've got the best that you can get, and it doesn't have a cap. I know pretty much everybody else, especially people in Europe, all have caps, and you won't be able to enjoy 4K content unless it's like seriously compressed, which kind of defeats the purpose.
Right.
Let's see here. Before we move on, I wanted to say a couple things. First, I forgot to mention this at the top of the show, and we definitely want to mention, we moved our Cultcast Live show. So it's going to be on Tuesday. Let me make sure I get this right here. It's going to be Tuesday, October 10th, which is this next Tuesday at 12 p.m. Pacific time. 12 p.m. Pacific time, Tuesday, October 10th. And we hope to see you all there for that. It's going to be a lot of fun. The Cultcast Live will be broadcast live on my YouTube channel, which I will include a link to in the show notes. You can check that out on Tuesday at 12 p.m. Pacific time. But I also want to pull the blanket off of a little something that I've been working on. I've kind of alluded to it here and there on Twitter, but my YouTube channel is coming to life. I am rededicating myself really to creating video content that I love, all sorts of technology, gadgetry, gear in the spirit of the Cultcast. And what I like about YouTube is it's interactive. Unlike the Cultcast, where you just listen to it and you don't get to interact with us at all, YouTube has the whole comment section. We can talk back and forth about stuff. I can get your feedback. You can tell me what you think. We can talk to each other. And I really value that connection with all of you. I don't want to sound corny here. I'm going to start crying. I'm going to have to play Sarah McLachlan in the background. I treasure that connection. It's something that I really don't like about podcasting. We kind of exist in a vacuum, and YouTube takes you out of that and allows you to build more of a community. And so you are my community. I'm inviting you to my YouTube channel to check it out. I think you're really going to like it. I'm going to bring you the coolest, quirkiest, weirdest, funnest products that I can find. This is not going to just be technology, but I'm going to be reaching into the cookie jars of all genres of products, and I've already got some weird ones on tap. Okay, I'll stop proselytizing. I just want to say I love you. I would love to see you on YouTube. I love you. Leander, you also wanted to mention a couple things about the Cult of Mac watch store, right?
Yeah, that's it. Right, yeah, thanks. So, yeah, the watch store, we have a bunch of new stuff this week. We just added some new suppliers, and we have some really nice stands and battery chargers from people like Canex, the Canex GoPower watch portable battery charger. It's a really nice little battery that you can lay your watch on when you're traveling. That's $99.95. We just added that.
That's good looking too.
Yeah, and it's really good. It holds a bunch of charges on that, so it's that's really good for, like, you know, for taking a longer trip. Mm-hmm. And then of course we have a Zenz power bank, which is a small little tiny cube, probably about the same size as the watch itself. That's good for a couple of charges. That's great for a little for a weekend away. Really cute, $50, $49.99. We have some good charge, good stands as well. We have a really cheap one, a head dock, that's $15. That's really popular. That thing sells like crazy. But we also have some new ones from Press Play. So these are docks for your phone and for your watch at the same time. Charge them both up. Looks really slick. It's in aluminum, black, or silver. So, yeah, we just added this stuff. We've got a whole bunch of new fabric bands from Nylon. They're really, really nice. Very, very popular. They're relatively inexpensive, $40. They're kind of, you know, it's like a James Bond type nylon fabric strap.
Oh, that's my style for sure.
Yeah, and they have that kind of NATO style coloring. Those are really, really nice. They're really, really good. Really, really good watch bands. So yeah, the store's kicking. I really love it. I love going to the store. Love checking it out. Looking at all the selection. I think we've got a fantastic selection. It's a really good, really well curated store. Or, you know, thanks to Amy Eikenberry, who runs it. She's doing a fantastic job of getting products in there. And of course, we have a bunch of stuff on sale, too. And if you're a Cultcast listener, if you want to use the code Cultcast at checkout, Cultcast, C-U-L-T-C-A-S-T, that's an extra 20% off of your order. So I think that's a really good deal. And it's a really good introduction to our listeners to the watch store. So please, yeah, check it out.
20%?
Yeah, 20%.
What?
And you know the thing about that 20%? What?
I'm going to change that. I'm going to make it 10%.
Oh, you can't backtrack now. You should go up. You got to take it up to 60%.
Are you mad?
Leander's going crazy. You can make it 100%, Leander.
Yeah.
Imagine how much business you get if you made that discount code. 100%. Well, I should say the 20% discount, A, it really is a secret discount just for our listeners. It's not posted anywhere. The only way you would know about it is if you listen to this show. And it's the biggest discount that you offer.
Right.
Definitely going to get a unified charging pad for my iPhone X once I get that in that will be probably be June or July when it finally
2019.
Ships. 2019, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay, let's see here. Oh man, we're running long. So Leander, can you run through this by the numbers thing and then we'll jump into our favorite cases?
Okay, sure. Yeah, definitely. So you know,
so Steve this is Jobs. How Apple has fared since Steve Jobs passed away.
Right, and it's the anniversary of his death today, Thursday, right? The 5th, October 5th?
Yes, right.
6 years ago. And in the last 6 years, yeah, you know, I mean, Apple has been absolutely killing it. It's crazy. It's a much, much bigger company now than when he died. And it's funny because, you know, you'd think back then, I mean, you know, Apple was like, it seemed like it was at the top of its game, didn't it? When he was around, it was becoming, you know, it was one of the biggest companies in tech, for sure, if not the biggest company in tech. Was that right at the time he died? You know, the iPhone was definitely a juggernaut by then, wasn't it? It was like, it was really picking up steam. They were like on the iPhone 4S, is that right? And Siri was just coming out. And they were making, I think they had like $60 billion in the bank.
But anyway, that's all? Only 60?
Well, it seems like, I know. And it's funny because at the time, you know, it seemed like a lot of money. I think I remember thinking at the time that you know, it was like, wow, Apple's really, you know, it was an amazing transformation, because the whole story, the narrative about Apple before then was that the company was doomed, you know, and I think things like the iPod were considered, it was like a one hit wonder, wasn't it? Apple got lucky with the iPod, and it was a huge runaway hit product, and you know, how are they going to do that again? And then the iPhone came along, and that was another ginormous hit. And even by 2011, I think it was kind of clear, even though it had only been out. How many years had it been out by then? When was introduced? The iPhone.
Oh, well, they were on the iPhone 4S, so five years?
5 years, yeah. So yeah. I think it was obviously, it was really clearly picking up steam by then. And I think people were reassessing very definitely, you know, Steve Jobs and Apple and this ability to, you know, to invent these, like, these completely epoch-defining products. Anyway, so, but then since in the last 6 years, I mean, it's really gone crazy. The stock has nearly tripled. And of course, like, you know, it's split seven times. If you bought stock back then when he died, and I think it took a hit when he died, didn't it? So that would have been a great time to buy it. It's tripled then. It's now the largest company in the world, of course, with a market capitalization of $778 billion. And that's $140 billion more than second place, which is Alphabet, you know, previously known as Google. Mm-hmm. And it's now, I think it's really, you know, like $778 billion. It's within shouting distance of becoming the world's first trillion-dollar company.
Which is crazy. It reminds me of those mega companies in movies where there was some evil genius who had like a corporation that was like, you know, global. He owned like the entire globe. It's just crazy to think that their company is that big now.
Right, exactly. And it's got $261 billion in the bank. $261. And that's on top of they've done $100 billion in buybacks of stock and dividends. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like they've really been sort of sitting on $361 billion, which is crazy. Guess how much the U.S. government has? Guess how much their cash reserves is for the entire U.S. government, the U.S. Treasury.
I'm gonna be liberal with my estimate and say $25-26 million.
It's actually a bit more than that. It's $74 billion. And Apple's sitting on, you know, like $261 billion. So it's crazy.
Wow.
It's a lot more money than even the U.S. government has.
So they have three times the reserve of the U.S. government?
Yeah, right. I know. Madness, isn't it?
Crazy. Actually, four times the reserve. Almost four times the reserve.
And they're making that, you know, I mean, they're making, and just to sort of consider how mind-boggling it is, you know, Apple in Q1 2017, so the first quarter of this year, you know, it made $78 billion in revenue. $78 billion. It's such a ginormous number. It's just mind-boggling. It's hard to, like, wrap your noodle around it. Mm-hmm. And $18 billion of that was profit. $18 billion. Crazy.
Yeah.
You know, that's almost as much as Microsoft made in the entire year of 2016.
Wow.
So 2016, Microsoft made $85 billion. In the first quarter, the first 3 months of 2017, you know, Apple made $78 billion. So it's within shouting distance of what Microsoft made in the entire year. And then, you know, Facebook, guess how much they made in the whole year? Well, I'll tell you, $27 billion. So
yeah, I was going to, I will guess, but it will just be way off.
Yeah, you know, and they're like, they're the biggest company on the in the internet space, you know, with 2 billion active users, monthly users now, 2 billion. It's crazy. Facebook's numbers are mind-boggling. And they're only making, you know, with even a company that size and that big, that powerful, you know, they're only making $27-30 billion a year, which is like half of what Apple's making every quarter.
And it's nuts considering that Facebook isn't even selling like an actual product. They don't have anything that they have to manufacture and sell. Right. It doesn't cost them anything. Well, I mean, it costs them something, but they don't have a widget that they're selling like Apple does, which costs them something to make and then sell.
Right. Yeah, exactly true. So, yeah, I mean, Facebook's margins are crazy because, you know, it has a relatively small workforce. And it's making, you know, each member of its workforce is making millions and millions of dollars for the company. I mean, they're looking at, I think, it's 60-70% margins for Facebook, which is mad. But, so Apple's nowhere near. But even Apple's, you know, Apple's doing 30-40% margin on its products. You know, Apple, I mean, is crazy profitable. Crazy profitable. Yeah, it's interesting. It's a fascinating company, you know, because like, there's nothing been anything like it in the history of industry. You know, like, and no one has been operating at these scales ever in the history of industry. Even if you go back and sort of, you know, like correct it for inflation, that kind of stuff, you know. You know, like even the biggest companies in the world, like GM or GE, you know, these huge, multinational corporations that are making stuff. I mean, no one has ever operated at this scale before, ever.
Let me ask you this, though. Do you think that Apple has been negatively affected by the loss of their taste maker, Steve Jobs? Or do you feel that the spirit of what he did has been adequately infused into Apple where they can persist without him and still create the kinds of products that they were creating under Steve Jobs' supervision?
I argue for the latter. I think definitely that, you know, that his spirit has been infused into the company, and that it's been kicking along really well without him. It's impossible to say, of course, you know, like, because if he had survived, what might they have done that they haven't done? You know, how might it might have spun into a parallel universe, right, where they could have been even bigger and there could have been even more crazy great products that we haven't seen. But I think, you know, it was always doing that anyway, even when he was around. And because he was so secretive and because he was in charge of all of the presentations, he gave all the keynotes, you know, he got undue credit. You know, so everything was his idea. Oh my God, the iPhone, Steve Jobs. You know, that was all Steve Jobs, right?
Right.
And you know, so now that he's gone, you know, you have the opposite effect. Everyone looks at Tim Cook and they say he's a boring, you know, colorless drone, and he hasn't got any imagination. He doesn't know how to like come up with products. You know, they've lost their visionary product leader, the product visionary. And I don't think it was, you know, true when he was around. I don't think it's true now. I think the products, you know, have always come from the staff at Apple. And of course, you know, the leadership was super important, and the integration of the entire company and how they did everything. You know, Jobs was brilliant at a whole bunch of different things, you know, marketing, product design, even just sort of like just the whole idea of swinging of just, you know, like betting the whole company on something. Because the iPhone, like when they were in development, you know, it was like he was able to say, okay, we're going to bet the whole company on this, which is basically what they did, because they stopped development of almost everything for 2 or 3 years while they were working on it.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like if it had failed, they would have been in serious trouble. And I think you sort of see a little bit of that now. You know, like I think Apple stumbled the last couple of years, you know, with the updates on the Macintosh line, the Macs and the MacBooks probably haven't kept up. You know, they've definitely been, you know, they were super slow for updating a whole bunch of the sort of core products, and everything's been focused on the iPhone. They've done a fantastic job of keeping that updated, of course. You know, people are worried about where's the next sort of, you know, epoch-making product coming from. And I would argue, I'd say the Apple Watch, I think, is definitely the basis of something like an iPhone-type hit. I think wearables are going to become a gigantic category. The most personal devices, you know, that any company has ever put out, I think they're going to evolve into these, like, into very, very sophisticated health and wellness tracking, you know, digital health devices. And we're just sort of seeing the beginnings of that, but this is something that's going to happen over the next 5-10 years. And of course, that's just a leap of faith, you know. I mean, it could just be like a fancy watch, who knows? But you know, and the car as well, right? I think there's a huge shift going on in the transportation industry, and a robot car, if they're working on one, even just if it's just an electric car, I think is going to be, you know, like another enormous, you know, potentially enormous new category for Apple. But if you look at all the other things they're doing as well, you know, like all the IoT stuff, HomeKit, home control, you know, like the computing is coming to all these different areas that has never been before. You know, digital health, wellness, you know, the home, cars, automotive, transportation. So there's, I think, a ton of potential. I don't see any reason why Apple shouldn't, you know, won't continue to dominate in those categories.
You mentioned HomeKit, and I just want to mention, next show, we're going to be talking more about HomeKit and iOS 11 because, oh my gosh, they blew the doors off HomeKit. It is so much more powerful now in iOS 11 than it was in iOS 10, and you can do some pretty cool stuff with HomeKit. And I really like HomeKit a lot. I use it a lot in my house. I have automation set up, and it's incredibly powerful now. So if you're not taking advantage of it, I'll tell you some of the stuff that you can do next show. So just a little teaser for that. We've only got a few minutes left, Leander, so let's move on. Let's talk about our favorite iPhone 8 and iPhone 8 Plus cases. I think we all have some stuff picked. Lewis, why don't you kick us off? Because you said you had a case that you absolutely love and that it's the only case that you use. So I'm interested to hear what you got.
That's correct, sir. It is a Edward Field wallet case.
Edward Field?
Edward Field. It's a small brand. They're based in San Francisco. And, it's got a flap, right? A leather thing that folds over the front, so it makes it look kind of like a folio, right? You got room for five business cards, or not business cards, credit cards in the front there, a little place to...
business cards, woo! Man. He keeps five business cards.
I love my business cards. But you can stash... I don't know, Gus's sandwich card. You can stash some money in there.
Sandwich card.
You know, I've been using these things forever, and they're lovely. They look great. They're very functional. They're far more protective than you might imagine. I mean, I dropped my phone today, and I was actually quite scared because it fell from a counter straight onto some tile floor, and it sounded like a you know, a Bible hit the ground. I was like, oh my God, I finally broke a phone. But it's fine. It's totally fine. It protects it like crazy. And, you know, they hand-stitch these things, and the one that I'm using is actually a kind of an old one. They keep making them a little bit better, like the stitching's a little finer now, and they're showing us how they removed like a little tiny bit of leather from the corners, so it's not quite as bulky as the one that I've got, but I just really love it, man. And I think it's pretty distinctive. It's not some plastic, you know, I don't know. I really have a great disdain for taking this beautiful phone and putting it in a you know, ugly plastic case. I love this thing. I love the way it ages.
Preach, brother. Right.
I hate that too. I can't stand big, ugly, plastic, bulky cases. In fact, I just did a video about my favorite minimalist cases, because all the cases that are out there are absolutely horrid. They look terrible. And I feel so bad putting a ugly, bulky case on this beautiful, svelte piece of technology that Johnny Ive spent years honing and crafting and iterating upon. And then you take a $5 plastic case and slap it on there. Like, what?
I know.
I really like these, Lewis. I'm looking at the website right now.
Oh, they're beautiful.
This thing looks great. It's really minimal and sleek, and it's just a plain leather wallet. I would totally. Oh, it's made in the USA too?
San Francisco. Yeah, they and you know, okay, so you put your phone in there, micro suction holds it on there, you know, which it's a little sheet of I don't know, micro suction. It's not glue, so you can take it off and put it back on if you really want to. I mean, I have a handful of times. It doesn't get adhesive all over the back of your phone or anything like that. Yeah. And it holds it in place extremely well. And you know, this is one thing that I found kind of shocking about these guys. They actually have a trade-in or a trade-up thing. I think you get like $40 off if you get the new one, if you have a previous one, which I don't remember ever seeing a case manufacturer do anything like that. I mean, I suppose it's possible that somebody has, but I found that really surprising. You know, I had an email like, oh, the new phones are out. If you had one of these, and if you'd like another one, you know, we'll give you $40 off. Cause you know, they cost like what, $100 or so.
Yeah. They're $100.
But so if you can get one for 60, that's unbelievably awesome.
Yeah.
Deal.
For a case like this, this is like a contemporary, gentleman's case. It looks like what a gentleman would carry. It's very classy, but not in a dad-ish kind of way. It doesn't look like something a dad would carry. It'd be like, it's like a James Bond, to use a reference we talked about earlier. Like, this is something he would carry in his pocket.
Yeah, I honestly love the thing, and it just looks different. You know, it's a little bit different, and it's just kind of classy.
Very cool. Just like the man who carries it.
Yeah.
All right, Leander, what do you got for us?
Well, mine's very similar, in fact, to Edward Field. Mm-hmm. And hold on, where's my phone going?
Someone turn off your 13 ringers. How many ringers do you have going on that phone?
Everything's going off.
All your devices are
hand off.
Every single one.
I was
one,
like, jeez.
Hand off. Hurry, this is my phone call. I got to get on. But
okay.
So mine's
do this, and then you can hang up, and we'll wrap it up without you.
It's Notice. It's they're a European brand. I think they're from the Netherlands, and they also make leather wallet cases.
Yeah.
They're really nice. They're super, super nice. In fact, one of my favorite cases for the iPhone 7 was a Notice case that was like a folio case, you know, so it had like a plastic back and then a leather front. I've replaced it with an OtterBox one, which I think is just as good. But the Notice stuff has a little magnet in the back that comes with like what they call a micro dock. So they give you a couple of these little magnets that you can peel off. They've got glue on the back. And you put the little micro dock anywhere you want, like so on the you know, say on the fascia of your car, or you can put it on the fridge or on the wall, or you know, on your iMac even, you know, on the front. And then you can just stick the case will stick magnetically to that little micro dock, you know, so you can dock your phone anywhere.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and it's actually quite useful. Like I actually used it in the car, you know, which is because the car, there was nowhere good for me to put a somewhere to dock the phone when I wanted to use the navigation. So I stuck, you know, peeled it off and stuck it to the to the dashboard, and or you know, near the heater or whatever it is, in the middle, and it worked really well. It's actually still stuck there. So these are really good, and the magnet is built into the case, so you can't even see it. It's totally invisible. And like Edward Field, you know, it's all leather. And I don't think it's hand stitched. It looks machine stitched because it's too perfect. But they're really nice cases, really well made. For, you know, and they look better with age. You know, they have that lovely. They get that kind of patina. You know, when you use them. And they also have like a micro. I can't remember what they call it. That sort of. They don't have a glue. They have like a little micro patch. That you stick there. It's like little gecko feet, you know.
Yeah, it's just like the one that's in the Edward Field. It's like micro suction cups.
Micro suction, right?
You can't even tell there's suction cups on there because they're so small. It just looks like adhesive strip or pad.
Right, and they're really good. You know, like Lewis said, you can clean them up, and if they get a bit dusty and gunky, you just clean it off with some water, and it's good to go. It works again. Yeah. So my choice is Notice. I think they're really nice cases.
Wow, two beautiful cases. These are both great. And I love giving attention to people who make beautiful cases because there are so many bad ones out there. Leander, do you need to go?
I got to go.
Okay, that's right. So Leander's got to hop off, and Lewis and I will go ahead and wrap her up because I still got to pimp my case. And Leander, you're going to miss out. Okay. You're going to miss out big time. But
right.
You can read it. You can listen to the
I'll
show,
to the
and
show,
you'll find
yeah.
out what my...
I'll catch
yeah,
you on
okay.
the show. Okay. All right, see you guys.
All right, see you later. Okay, so my pick is a case that I think I've actually talked about on this show before. It is the Crash Guard, the Rhino Shield Crash Guard, which is a true and honest-to-goodness bumper case. You virtually never see cases like this anymore. And all the bumper cases that are out there are called bumper cases, but they have a back on the back. And this is a real bumper case. It only has the bumper around the outside perimeter of the phone. And not only is it the best bumper case I have ever used... It's one of the best cases that I've used. It's extremely, extremely protective, even though it's a bumper case, because it has a lip that extends a little bit beyond the phone. So if you drop it on the back or on the front, the glass or the back of the iPhone won't hit the ground because the lip will hit the ground before the iPhone does. It fits extremely well, and it meets one of my other criteria in that it keeps the buttons on your phone nice and clicky. You know when you put a cheap case on your iPhone and it makes the buttons really mushy and it makes the buttons hard to press?
Right.
I hate that. You got to keep it clicky. It's got to be clicky if you want me to pimp it on the show. And this does. It keeps the buttons nice and clicky. And it's extremely protective. They say it will protect your phone from a 11-foot drop. And I've seen people on YouTube demo this. People like shooting it through baskets, throwing it across the room, and the phones come out unscathed every single time. It's a stellar case. It's the Rhino Shield Crash Guard. They make these for virtually every phone. They're available for iPhone 8 right now too, and also for iPhone 7 and iPhone 6, and I'm sure for the iPhone 10 when that comes out. And I'll be probably buying one for my iPhone 10 when that comes out as well. And I want to reiterate, if you want to see what this case looks like on a phone, along with eight of my other favorite minimalist iPhone cases, I just put a new video out on my YouTube channel that I would love you guys to check out and toss a thumbs up on. I'll put a link to that in the show notes if you want to check it out, and you could see the best cases for your iPhone 8 and your iPhone 7, because, you know, there's just so much crap out there. You really have to have people trying out all this stuff and telling you which ones look the best, in my opinion, to really be able to figure out what's out there, because there's just too much crap. There's too much cruft out there, Lewis.
What color do you have of that Rhino Shield?
I've got a black one, and I have it on my black phone. So it's just black on black. It looks like Batman's phone.
They have a lot of colors, huh? I mean,
yeah, they've got blue and red and all sorts of wacky colors. I just want it to look minimalist. I want it to match the color of my phone, and that's what I am looking for in most cases. I want it to accentuate the features of my phone. And one of the things I didn't even mention that is obvious, but I'm still going to mention it anyways, because it's a bumper case, you can still see the entire design of your phone. You can see the entire back. You can see the entire front. So it allows you to enjoy the design of your phone and also still keep it protected, which is something that virtually no other case does. All the other cases out there pretty much obscure at least the back of your phone. Some of them, right, like your case, obscure the front, which is fine, but I like to enjoy the industrial design of my phone, and this is kind of the best of both worlds. It allows you to have protection on your phone, but you still get to enjoy the design of your phone.
And it's really thin, huh?
It's pretty thin. It does add a little bit of bulk, but it's not a lot of bulk, and On the iPhone 7 or the iPhone 8, I don't even think you would notice it. On the iPhone 7 or 8 Plus, it's a little bit more noticeable because those phones are larger. But I still think it's a good trade-off to have. I'm using it right now, and it's one of my favorite cases out there. Okay, sweet. Well, that's it. I'll link to all of these cases in the show notes so you can check this stuff out. Let's go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the CultCast we have for you guys this week. If you want to come talk to us about any of the stories we mentioned in today's show, or tell us about an iPhone case you think that we need to check out, we would love to hear from you. We're all on Twitter. I'm at Erfon, E-R-F-O-N. Leander is L. Caney. Lewis is at Lewis Wallace. This has been the CultCast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the CultCast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys Tuesday for the live show. Tuesday at 12 p.m. Pacific time. Tuesday. Lewis, what do you got for me?
It's Oktoberfest season.
Oh, so you're drunk right now?
Yeah.
I didn't even realize that. You were drinking all the show.
This program is brought to you by Stanford University. Please visit us at stanford.edu.
Thank you. I'm honored to be with you today for your commencement from one of the finest universities in the world. Truth be told, I never graduated from college, and this is the closest I've ever gotten to a college graduation. Today, I want to tell you three stories from my life. That's it. No big deal. Just three stories. The first story is about connecting the dots. I dropped out of Reed College after the first 6 months, but then stayed around as a drop-in for another 18 months or so before I really quit. So why'd I drop out? It started before I was born. My biological mother was a young, unwed graduate student, and she decided to put me up for adoption. She felt very strongly that I should be adopted by college graduates, so everything was all set for me to be adopted at birth by a lawyer and his wife. Except that when I popped out, they decided at the last minute that they really wanted a girl. So my parents, who were on a waiting list, got a call in the middle of the night asking, "We've got an unexpected baby boy. Do you want him?" They said, "Of course." My biological mother found out later that my mother had never graduated from college and that my father had never graduated from high school. She refused to sign the final adoption papers. She only relented a few months later when my parents promised that I would go to college. This was the start in my life. And 17 years later, I did go to college. But I naively chose a college that was almost as expensive as Stanford. And all of my working class parents' savings were being spent on my college tuition. After 6 months, I couldn't see the value in it. I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life, and no idea how college was going to help me figure it out. And here I was, spending all the money my parents had saved their entire life. So I decided to drop out and trust that it would all work out okay. It was pretty scary at the time, but looking back, it was one of the best decisions I ever made. The minute I dropped out, I could stop taking the required classes that didn't interest me and begin dropping in on the ones that looked far more interesting. It wasn't all romantic. I didn't have a dorm room, so I slept on the floor in friends' rooms. I returned Coke bottles for the 5-cent deposits to buy food with. And I would walk the 7 miles across town every Sunday night to get one good meal a week at the Hare Krishna temple. I loved it. And much of what I stumbled into by following my curiosity and intuition turned out to be priceless later on. Let me give you one example. Reed College at that time offered perhaps the best calligraphy instruction in the country. Throughout the campus, every poster, every label on every drawer was beautifully hand calligraphed. Because I had dropped out and didn't have to take the normal classes, I decided to take a calligraphy class to learn how to do this. I learned about serif and sans serif typefaces, about varying the amount of space between different letter combinations, about what makes great typography great. It was beautiful, historical, artistically subtle in a way that science can't capture, and I found it fascinating. None of this had even a hope of any practical application in my life. But 10 years later, when we were designing the first Macintosh computer, it all came back to me. And we designed it all into the Mac. It was the first computer with beautiful typography. If I had never dropped in on that single course in college, the Mac would have never had multiple typefaces or proportionally spaced fonts. And since Windows just copied the Mac, it's likely that no personal computer would have them. If I had never dropped out, I would have never dropped in on that calligraphy class, and personal computers might not have the wonderful typography that they do. Of course, it was impossible to connect the dots looking forward when I was in college, but it was very, very clear looking backwards 10 years later. Again, you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backwards. So you have to trust that the dots will somehow connect in your future. You have to trust in something, your gut, destiny, life, karma, whatever. Because believing that the dots will connect down the road will give you the confidence to follow your heart even when it leads you off the well-worn path, and that will make all the difference. My second story is about love and loss. I was lucky. I found what I loved to do early in life. Woz and I started Apple in my parents' garage when I was 20. We worked hard, and in 10 years, Apple had grown from just the two of us in a garage into a $2 billion company with over 4,000 employees. We just released our finest creation, the Macintosh, a year earlier, and I'd just turned 30. And then I got fired. How can you get fired from a company you started? Well, as Apple grew, we hired someone who I thought was very talented to run the company with me. And for the first year or so, things went well. But then our visions of the future began to diverge, and eventually we had a falling out. When we did, our board of directors sided with him. And so at 30, I was out, and very publicly out. What had been the focus of my entire adult life was gone, and it was devastating. I really didn't know what to do for a few months. I felt that I had let the previous generation of entrepreneurs down, that I had dropped the baton as it was being passed to me. I met with David Packard and Bob Noyce, and tried to apologize for screwing up so badly. I was a very public failure, and I even thought about running away from the valley. But something slowly began to dawn on me. I still loved what I did. The turn of events at Apple had not changed that one bit. I'd been rejected, but I was still in love. And so I decided to start over. I didn't see it then, but it turned out that getting fired from Apple was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. The heaviness of being successful was replaced by the lightness of being a beginner again, less sure about everything. It freed me to enter one of the most creative periods of my life. During the next 5 years, I started a company named Next, another company named Pixar, and fell in love with an amazing woman who would become my wife. Pixar went on to create the world's first computer animated feature film, Toy Story, and is now the most successful animation studio in the world. In a remarkable turn of events, Apple bought Next, and I returned to Apple, and the technology we developed at Next is at the heart of Apple's current renaissance. And Laureen and I have a wonderful family together. I'm pretty sure none of this would have happened if I hadn't been fired from Apple. It was awful tasting medicine, but I guess the patient needed it. Sometimes life's gonna hit you in the head with a brick. Don't lose faith. I'm convinced that the only thing that kept me going was that I loved what I did. You've got to find what you love. And that is as true for work as it is for your lovers. Your work is gonna fill a large part of your life. And the only way to be truly satisfied is to do what you believe is great work. And the only way to do great work is to love what you do. If you haven't found it yet, keep looking and don't settle. As with all matters of the heart, you'll know when you find it. And like any great relationship, it just gets better and better as the years roll on. So keep looking, don't settle. My third story is about death. When I was 17, I read a quote that went something like, "If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right." It made an impression on me, and since then, for the past 33 years, I've looked in the mirror every morning and asked myself, if today were the last day of my life, would I want to do what I am about to do today? And whenever the answer has been no for too many days in a row, I know I need to change something. Remembering that I'll be dead soon is the most important tool I've ever encountered to help me make the big choices in life. Because almost everything, all external expectations, all pride, all fear of embarrassment or failure, these things just fall away in the face of death, leaving only what is truly important. Remembering that you are going to die is the best way I know to avoid the trap of thinking you have something to lose. You are already naked. There is no reason not to follow your heart. About a year ago, I was diagnosed with cancer. I had a scan at 7:30 in the morning, and it clearly showed a tumor on my pancreas. I didn't even know what a pancreas was. The doctors told me this was almost certainly a type of cancer that is incurable, and that I should expect to live no longer than 3 to 6 months. My doctor advised me to go home and get my affairs in order, which is doctor's code for prepare to die. It means to try and tell your kids everything you thought you'd have the next 10 years to tell them in just a few months. It means to make sure everything is buttoned up so that it will be as easy as possible for your family. It means to say your goodbyes. I live with that diagnosis all day. Later that evening, I had a biopsy where they stuck an endoscope down my throat, through my stomach and into my intestines, put a needle into my pancreas and got a few cells from the tumor. I was sedated, but my wife, who was there, told me that when they viewed the cells under a microscope, the doctor started crying because it turned out to be a very rare form of pancreatic cancer that is curable with surgery. I had the surgery, and thankfully, I'm fine now. This was the closest I've been to facing death, and I hope it's the closest I get for a few more decades. Having lived through it, I can now say this to you with a bit more certainty than when death was a useful but purely intellectual concept. No one wants to die. Even people who want to go to heaven don't want to die to get there. And yet, death is the destination we all share. No one has ever escaped it. And that is as it should be, because death is very likely the single best invention of life. It's life's change agent. It clears out the old to make way for the new. Right now, the new is you. But someday, not too long from now, you will gradually become the old and be cleared away. Sorry to be so dramatic, but it's quite true. Your time is limited, So don't waste it living someone else's life. Don't be trapped by dogma, which is living with the results of other people's thinking. Don't let the noise of others' opinions drown out your own inner voice. And most important, have the courage to follow your heart and intuition. They somehow already know what you truly want to become. Everything else is secondary. When I was young, there was an amazing publication called the Whole Earth Catalog, which was one of the Bibles of my generation. It was created by a fellow named Stuart Brand, not far from here in Menlo Park, and he brought it to life with his poetic touch. This was in the late 60s, before personal computers and desktop publishing, so it was all made with typewriters, scissors, and Polaroid cameras. It was sort of like Google in paperback form 35 years before Google came along. It was idealistic, overflowing with neat tools and great notions. Stuart and his team put out several issues of the Whole Earth Catalog, and then, when it had run its course, they put out a final issue. It was the mid-1970s, and I was your age. On the back cover of their final issue was a photograph of an early morning country road, the kind you might find yourself hitchhiking on if you were so adventurous. Beneath it were the words, "Stay hungry, stay foolish." It was their farewell message as they signed off. Stay hungry, stay foolish. And I have always wished that for myself. And now, as you graduate to begin anew, I wish that for you. Stay hungry, stay foolish. Thank you all very much.
The preceding program is copyrighted by Stanford University. Please visit us at stanford.edu.